Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a man whose life is basically trying to put together a 70 podcast puzzle. Rob Cicerino, hello everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And it's voicemail number one of Survivor 33. And today we're going to speak with my good friend Kurt Clark. Very excited to have the tabulator with us to answer your voicemails that were sent in after the episode. We got some really fun stuff to talk about here today. If you want to get your voicemails into the show, of course, robiswebsite.com/voicemail. Look for to get them into week two coming up after the second episode of Survivor. Had a great recap episode with Millennial Meech. Meech Fitz, Michelle Fitzgerald, the winner of Survivor Kill Wrong. She joined me yesterday for a fun chat about the first episode. And of course, we had our exit interview in Survivor Know-It-Alls hosted by Stephen Fishback and Tyson Apostle, all up on robhasawebsite.com. Make sure you don't miss any of those podcasts when you subscribe. And it's the start of the season, so maybe not everybody's subscribed yet. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our first voicemail podcast guest of the new season and one of the great friends of Rob Has a Podcast. He is here to promote the ease of use of the new robhasawebsite.com, where you could easily access all of the podcasts we have done about The Quest, about Opposite Worlds, and of course, Utopia. Please welcome the great Kurt Clark.
Hey, Rob. I was waiting for the theme song to pop in. Like, where's the Utopia theme song?
But Don't test me this early in the voicemail season, yeah. Kurt.
There's a lot of audio things to balance. I get that. But at least with none of these shows, it's like you don't have to search across multiple seasons for the one that you're looking for. There's pretty much only one of
each. So easy to find in the archives. Just go to archive shows and you're right there to all of the wonderful podcasts that we did that no longer exist, that all got jinxed by the Clark curse.
That's me.
That's you. You know that if they were going to ever redo Utopia, I think the idea of a millennials versus Gen X Utopia might be an interesting take on it, Kurt.
As opposed to like them having to collaborate, you want to kind of be them going at it. Yeah, I think the Gen X might have a leg up with that one.
You think that the Gen Xers would be better? Because I feel like that there is a lot of like the millennials, they're going to disrupt everything. They're going to make their own new colony. Millennial Utopia. Yeah.
Would you be able to get the requisite number of contractors for the millennial team? Because I think we had like three the last time we looked. Three contractors in Utopia when it left the air. Gone too soon. We do have a beekeeper in Taylor, though.
Yeah. He knows all about the bees.
Yeah.
All right. Boy. Polyamory, I feel like, is a pretty millennial thing, right? Or is that more of a Gen X thing?
Polygeneral. So I think it goes across all the generations.
Okay. All right. Well, of course, we are here to get into all the feedback. If this is your first season with the Survivor podcast, one of the things we do every week is we get into taking your voicemails. I just want to hear what you guys have to say. And we have a guest on to talk about all of that. And this week, it's the great Kurt Clark. So, Kurt, how's everything been going over your summer? Last I saw you, we talked about Escape the Night. Did you keep up with that?
I did keep up with that. I actually subscribed to YouTube Red to keep up with that. And there's a couple other interesting reality-ish shows on YouTube Red that have kind of actually kept me in the mix for that. But anyway, it was a fun time. It scratched that escape room itch that I often get.
Yes. And also, how could I forget, we did the first boot draft, which you tabulated the results. And I think that you and I had the two worst teams of the four. Is that correct?
Let's just call a spade a spade. I had the worst team. I mean, yes, yeah, you were third place, but I was clearly, people weren't appreciating my Ryan Aiken, Deb Eaton power couple in my draft. But so what can I say?
There's no accounting for taste, Kurt. I can't tell you why people are necessarily going one way or the other. Has anybody that's trying to track the general election, have they recruited you to do any sort of exit polling or any sort of tabulating yet?
No, they haven't. I get all my news from 538.com in terms of polls. I think they've got it much more under control than I ever could. So
Gary Johnson hasn't reached out to you to make you part of the inner circle?
No. He's still trying to get that reach that minimum amount to get in the debate. So I think he's got more important things on his mind than me.
Well, maybe that he needs some tabulating to figure out how to he needs to get to that threshold.
I'll do my famous recount.
Yes. So when Gary Johnson asked for a recount in the election, you could tell him.
Yep, recount it and no, you're still not there.
Boy, you're going to piss off some millennials, Kurt, with Gary Johnson bashing.
I'm not bashing. I'm just saying he just unfortunately has not met that minimum number to get in the debates. I think they need to lower that number or get rid of it, but that's a separate topic.
All right. So, Kurt, let's jump into talking about this season 33. First of all, are you on board with the millennials versus Gen X idea?
Yeah, although I know I thought it was a really interesting risk that the producers took casting Kiefer Sutherland as the president. I did not.
No, that's
what?
Designated Survivor.
Oh, that's not
designated
that's not,
Survivor Gen X versus millennials.
I don't know if I'm actually ready to talk today. Then I rushed the wrong show. It's on the same night.
Yes.
And I was a designated person for voicemail, so I thought I had to watch Designated Survivor.
As long as you watch The Voice, yeah.
I like it, and I like it especially how much during the opening time on the beach they pretty much played out every single stereotype about both tribes.
The greatest hits.
Yes. We had to walk uphill both ways to get to the store versus participation trophies.
Yeah. I do think that it's such a trap with these theme seasons to get people who really end up like, who's going to fall into Jeff's trap of wanting to give the sound bites, bashing the other people based on this little theme that's going to be gone in 12 days. Like, who's going to really get the other tribe hating them by bashing whatever they are as a person before the game even starts?
Well, I think that would be CeCe and Paul. I mean,
yeah.
In fact, who's taking the bait? Some people were taking bait. Fewer people on the millennial tribe, but more people on the Gen X tribe. You don't see a lot of people like looking to bash Gen X. And I think, like you've pointed out, preseason is this just an opportunity for people to bash on some stereotypes about millennials? And some people took the bait.
Yeah, blame millennials for any problem that you have in the world. That's like the go-to move. But yeah, you brought up Paul, who was very quick. Like, he was like working on his material, I think, before he got to the island. He was talking about how easy the millennials have it. Let me play this clip that he was saying.
You actually had to walk to the store and get milk. Right. It didn't come in a drone.
Yeah, these kids nowadays, Kurt, they have it so easy that they had to walk to the store to get milk. Now these millennials, they just have drones bring them their milk whenever they need it.
Yeah, the sky is pretty much filled with milk drones.
Milk drones, as far as the eye can see, bringing these milklennials all of their milk via drone.
I'm just picturing like Ride of the Valkyries playing over the background as like this humming sound. And you see these little black things coming over the horizon.
Yeah.
It's
milk. Yeah.
I thought they didn't drink milk. Isn't like breakfast overrated? I thought that was the other stereotype about the
millennials. I believe that is a News AF story that, see, the cereal industry was really hurting that millennials are not eating breakfast. So I don't know.
What are they putting this milk on, this drone milk on?
I don't know. So, Paul may be misinformed. He may not have all the millennial fact-checking exactly right. That's possible.
They don't have Snopes on the island, so they can't really go in and say, oh, that's false. Sorry, Paul. Yeah. How do you milk a drone? That's another question. Can you milk a drone, Paul?
I don't know. Does it have nipples? We don't know. Exactly. Drone nipples is a whole other conversation. But he does hang out with a lot of millennials when he goes and looks for their treasure after the spring break is over. So maybe he is onto something.
Yeah, don't bite the hand that feeds you, Paul.
Yeah. Has he found a drone with a metal detector on the beach? Is that possible while he's on top of the milk drone?
I actually had to walk to the store and get milk. Right. It didn't come in a drone.
Yeah.
It's not that the drone. I like. It's not that the drone is carrying the milk. It is containing the milk. The milk is coming within the drone.
Wow. All right. Well, Yeah, that these Gen Xers had it so easy. Now, did Gen Xers have to walk anywhere to get milk? I feel like that part of it's not even true either. Kurt, you're a Gen Xer. I'm a Gen Xer. Did you ever have to walk to the store? Like, there wasn't even transportation to take you to go get milk?
Yeah, no, we drove. We had suburbs and wasn't really close enough to a grocery store to just walk there necessarily. Yeah. I probably did walk somewhere, picked up milk, and did bring it back a couple of times, but I, more often than not, would drive my car there.
If anybody is lazy, it's these baby boomers that used to have the milk delivered to their door.
At least for the cow.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. They have the cow right there.
Okay. All right. So, Kurt, the premiere episode, of course, was Wednesday night. What'd you think of episode number one of Survivor 33?
I liked it. It was especially kind of liked the whole first of being evacuated from the island because of the storm, and how there seemed to definitely be priority placed on getting the millennials out of there before they took their sweet time getting Gen X out of the island.
Oh, you think that they hurried up to get the millennials out quicker?
Well, they could have sent boats simultaneously to each beach, but they wanted Jeff to kind of be at the helm of the boat as it picked them up. So they had to pick one to go first. And just by the time they got to Gen X, that storm was pretty much almost on the island. There was still, like, there's one confessional from Rachel where it's like she's hanging out in the middle of a hurricane, like it's a Big Brother veto challenge, and trying to do an interview before, I think it's like, you know what, just get in the boat. This is not working.
Look, I don't mind that. I'm fine with going to go rescue the millennials first. You have a 18-year-old kid, a high school student that's out there on that beach. I'm not even so sure that high school student should be out there in the first place. So let's not lose him. How bad would that look for Survivor of that they have a kid who's in high school on the show and somehow they lost him in a cyclone?
They misplaced him.
It's terrible.
They had to get the permission slip is now like null and void.
Yeah. So I think that was the smart move to ultimately go get the millennials first. Kurt, were you interested in all of the weather stuff, the intense weather in the episode?
They made it interesting. It was, you know, if they hadn't ended up needing to evacuate them and kind of maybe explain away what happened for a better chunk of a day in terms of, you know, the first 3 days on the island, if it was just intense weather, I could have been but the fact that it impacted so much that they actually had to leave and that we got some good footage out of it. I still love, you know, Rachel doing the interview in the hurricane. I did actually like it being there. And with a 90-minute premiere, I didn't feel like it was padding things too much.
If I was going to nitpick it at all, and Steven and Tyson touched on this, I did feel like they sort of like yada yada the storm being over, where it's like, okay, sort of, yeah. It took them out of there. And then we stayed with the camp. I would have rather stayed with the players and seen a little bit of what was going on behind the scenes, like they ended up doing with sort of like with the Caleb medevac, where we got to see a little bit more of what goes on at Survivor production. Minor nitpick. Overall, I felt like that the episode was, it was a so-so premiere. I'm more excited about the season moving forward than I felt like that walking away from that 90-minute premiere, like this was one of the best premieres we've ever had.
I did find it interesting that the shelter, you know, collapse. I mean, CeCe's pointing out that, you know, if we had actually tried to stay here and weather it through the night, you know, this tree would have fallen in the shelter and fallen on us. And, you know, not since Scoopin' have we had such a dangerous shelter.
Oh, boy.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, that's extra dangerous, no matter what the weather is. That's
exactly.
Right. Yeah, so we got a lot of stuff, and we'll see how big of a factor the weather is going to be moving forward. But, Kurt, we got a lot of people coming away from this episode wanting to talk about the latest twist in Survivor, which is this legacy advantage. First off, this was, to me, I had no idea that this was coming. Did you have any inkling of a legacy advantage being in play?
No. And I think, like many of the listeners, and I think even Michelle, I think, mentioned it during her your interview with her, is I think, you know, many of us thought that this was a clue to a hidden immunity idol. We just assumed that's what it was when Jessica found it. And so, yeah, this is, I have no idea what's going on with this.
Okay,
and
well,
so
that's what the voicemail show is all about. People trying to get some answers in terms of different things. And so I guess we know it goes until day 36. If you get voted out, you have to assign it to somebody else. They get it in private. This is what we know. So let's start off with an email from Jason Weatherholtz, who wants to know about how it should be being used.
Hey, Rob and Kurt, this is Jason Weatherholtz from Maryland, and I want to talk about the legacy advantage for a moment. So I'm seeing a lot of interesting possibilities far down the road, so I'm probably getting a little bit ahead of myself. But what if on day 32, I'm in jeopardy of getting voted out by Kurt Clark?
Oh.
And I go to Kurt and I say, Kurt, do not vote me out. I know you're thinking about it. if you vote me out, I'm going to will this advantage to Rob Cesternino.
Aha.
And if I go this week, I'm going to make every effort to make sure you go next time. What do you guys think of that or any other possibilities you've maybe thought about? Love to hear what you have to say. Thanks a lot.
All right, Kurt. So let's talk about the usage of the Legacy Advantage. First of all, do you like the name Legacy Advantage?
It's better than Medallion of Power.
Yeah, but that's but, like Danny with faint praise.
Fair enough. I guess, like, in terms of, I was thinking about that today in terms of, like, why did they call it legacy? Like, what does that signify? I guess, you know, the fact that you kind of leave your legacy behind and, or it's, you know, something that kind of, like, lasts past you and beyond you. It's not a bad name. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's weird in that, unlike a hidden immunity idol, it's not something that you wonder if it's going to get played from week to week. It's really kind of a, it's like the anti- Chekhov's gun. You know, you're introducing it in the, you know, the very first act, but it really doesn't become a play a role in terms of it being used until the very end of the show. And so I think the only way for it to be interesting is if you do try to use it strategically at some point along the way.
Yeah. All right. So if you have it, do you feel like it is inherently a big advantage in the game, or is it almost like a non-factor now, and will it become a bigger advantage as we keep moving forward towards day 36?
I think it's a non-factor this early in the game. I think, you know, people at this point, you might not know people that well. You're looking for any excuse to vote somebody off, even if strategically it's not going to make sense because, well, you know, if somebody, Jessica gets voted out, she's just going to leave to somebody else. It's an advantage that you can't vote somebody out with in their pocket. So I think it's best for her to kind of keep it secret early on, potentially parlay it into use later on. Mm-hmm. But I see it potentially being misplayed by somebody.
Yeah. Do you feel at all that it's not going to be a big factor in the game because of how little hype we heard about it in the preseason? Or do you think that it could still be a big impact on the season?
That's an interesting twist on it. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, even with, like, some advantages that are vague and we don't know about them until they're uncovered in the game, we still will often hear about those. Like, you know, in the second half, there's a new advantage that's introduced, but we don't know the details. This we didn't even get anything about. So maybe it is kind of a, not necessarily a non-factor, but it has, you know, little impact. In terms of, like, you know, that specific scenario about, you know, me potentially voting somebody out and using it as leverage against me, I'd have to weigh out, you know, does the person who has the advantage now, are they more of a threat versus who they're likely going to give it to? Like, who would I rather have it? Assuming it doesn't go to me, who would I rather have the advantage going into day 36? And who's most likely to get it if whoever has it now gets voted out? There's just so many different ways to interpret it. I think you just got to keep it quiet, but which is exactly the opposite of what I think the producers would want.
I don't think that we got a lot of buzz about when they added the extra vote for Dan Foley. And I feel like that there was only like a little bit of a hint about like the Tyler Perry idol. And it was mostly about how Tyler Perry came up with an idea and we're going to use it in the second half. But we didn't even hear a word about this. So I just think that maybe it could be a different way that production is like, okay, let's not have anything out there and have this be a bit more of a surprise. What we did hear about was how they were going to hide the hidden immunity idols this season. And we didn't see anything about that in the premiere.
I'm really more curious about what the advantage is.
Okay.
I mean, at day 36, then, are we looking kind of at the final immunity challenge? Is that what this, or?
Let me play you a voicemail about this because Alex Kidwell is thinking the same thing, Kurt. Here is Alex.
I've seen a lot of speculation about what the legacy advantage might be, but if we're going to wait all season, literally all season, for the payoff to this thing, it's going to be something completely broken, right? Like, way too powerful.
All right, so what do you think, Kurt? Is it going to be something that is going to be worth the wait where it's so powerful on day 36, or do you think it's going to be something that really doesn't make a big impact?
I have the feeling it's going to be the sad trombone advantage in terms of once it's revealed, it's like, wah, wah.
Yeah. You have a 1 in 4 chance of having a round trip ticket if you get voted out tonight.
I don't know. Like if day 36, if we're looking at final immunity challenge, like I don't know if it's that you get to you know, get onto the stump that you have to balance on, you know, 5 minutes after everybody else does. I'm not sure. I just don't know what it could possibly be. And the fact that we're waiting so long, I see Alex's point that it's either going to be one of two things. It's either going to be so powerful that it breaks the game, although at that point, the worst it can do is guarantee that somebody gets into the final three, if we're looking at a final three, or else it's just going to kind of fall flat. Unless it's, again, something like Michelle's ability to nullify a jury vote. If it's something, again,
but that wouldn't be on day 36. That wouldn't be a day 36 advantage, I wouldn't think.
But I'm saying, what if it's like something similar where you potentially get to mess with the jury in some way, or do you get to, you know, bring somebody back into the game for to compete and the first two people are eliminated? I don't know.
In the past, the day 36 advantage, or the advantage right before the final immunity challenge, has not really paid a lot of dividends.
Get a chance to practice?
Yeah, it's either get a chance to practice, which I'm not sure. I think that maybe Keith did win that time. Again, people are going to get mad at me in the comments. But Malcolm had an advantage heading into the last immunity challenge based on a challenge he won. He did not ultimately win the challenge. We've also seen people get to eat food and rest up. Terry won an advantage before the final three challenge in Survivor Panama. Danielle ends up winning that competition. Amanda gets an advantage in China to eat a bunch of junk food, I think, before. I think then she does ultimately win that challenge. So it's not like a done deal. It seems like at best it's 50-50 of getting an advantage and ultimately winning. I think you would want the advantage. But, Kurt, is the added bullets that are going to be coming after you because you potentially might have the advantage, I'm getting the sense it's not going to be worth the risk.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for Jessica to – here's what I think is going to happen. I think Jessica doesn't make it to the final three, gets passed to somebody along the way, and one of those filing people will communicate around it unwisely. Okay, I see Jessica kind of keeping quiet about it. I could be completely wrong, but I have a feeling that, you know, once it leaves her hands, that whoever it goes to – they're probably going to potentially misplay it.
No, Kurt, she seemed like she was ready to make a deal with David about it in this episode.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was going to be it, but we never really saw where that was going.
Yeah. So I think that this thing is going to end up being more sort of like a thing you're going to be trying to get rid of. I think that this is going to be like the hot potato, or as Jeff Probst might say, the hot potato. So I think that people are going to want to not even have this thing. It's going to be like you're going to be drawing all of what is it? What is that, like in Pokemon Go, where you start having everybody start coming after you? What is that?
I don't think that's how that works.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing? Like a lure? All these votes are going to be coming at
yes,
you.
Yes, yes, okay, yes, the lure. potentially, I mean, it's interesting because you can give it away to somebody before. You don't have to, but it'd be interesting. Can you deny it? Can you say no, thank you? And is it kind of that thing that then becomes? Is it like the Clark curse? Is it something that you just really, you know, don't want to have following you around? But at the same time, if you get voted out, then somebody else does end up with it.
So, I wonder, is it a kind of thing, would you like your ally to have it?
Yeah.
You know where it is, but you don't necessarily want it yourself. And I wonder if maybe somebody savvy might say to their friend, like, oh, my good friend Kurt, like, I got you something. I want you to have this. It's a legacy advantage. That's for you. I could keep it if I wanted to. I'm giving it to you. I want you to do so well in this game. I'm so enrolled in your success in the game. I want you to have this advantage. And then if there's anybody that's coming out of the woodwork to like put votes on whoever has the legacy advantage, then maybe they're going after you instead of me.
Yeah. It's you say that I have a sense that votes are coming my way. This person has an advantage for later in the game. You don't necessarily have to give them the people who are coming at you the full story that, well, if they get voted out with it, that it gets passed, you know, back to you potentially. But you could say that, you know, I know that so-and-so has an advantage. Just kind of keep the part about the fact that the advantage gets passed back into the game if the person gets voted out with it.
I think people are going to be re-gifting this thing like it's a label baby junior. Just passing it around. Oh, look what I got you. It's a legacy advantage. Like, oh, my friend Tim Watley had the same one. Yes.
Label baby junior.
Yeah. I don't think I'd want any part of this legacy advantage.
Yeah, as long as you keep it quiet, you know, that's fine. But, you know, once the genie's out of the bottle, then it's like the game is not you can't put it back in. Like once people know it's there,
right?
Then and the game won't be the same from that point out. You can't forget it.
So the move is for Gen X Jessica to just keep this thing in her bag, not say anything to anybody. The problem is going to be at some point somebody's going to see it in her bag and be like, oh, Jessica has a clue to the idol. She's not sharing it with anybody else. And then I think that maybe people end up getting mad at her. I mean, it's hard to keep the, it's like a big thing. It wasn't like, you know, this little like little trinket that you can put in your pocket. It's like a folder of like, information.
Where am I? I'm going to put this trapper keeper down my pants and hope no one notices it.
Where do I keep the legacy dossier?
A trapper keeper for the millennials listening was something we used to put papers in school.
Yes, yes, right.
Yeah, it's not something that's easily hideable. Like maybe she can like bury it somewhere.
To carry it on your person? Can you just go hide it somewhere? Like if you don't have the legacy advantage on day 36, or do you have to bring it to every tribal council? Because then if you get voted out and Jeff says, okay, where's the legacy advantage? He's like, oh, I buried it. What happens to you if you don't bring the legacy advantage?
But as viewers, we want word of it to get out, right? We don't want her to necessarily keep it quiet. Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, we want it to really sort of blow up in everybody's face, and I think that production probably does too. So this brings us to another question about this, and this is from Stefano, who wants to talk about why he does not care for this legacy advantage. Here's Stefano.
Hey, Rob, this is Stefano from Canada.
Stefano.
And I am down on the legacy twist in Survivor.
Pissed.
And the only reason I don't really like it is because of the way it transfers between players. I would have preferred it if the transfer was not something hidden and instead right out in the open. As soon as you get voted out, you pass it to your player. This could bring some interesting dynamics to it because, let's say Jessica gets voted out and she gives it to Brett. Then if Brett gets voted out because he's targeted because of this advantage, maybe he doesn't do the same thing. Maybe he gives it to an enemy, someone from the millennials, perhaps Mari. And then Mari's whole group starts to target her because she has this advantage. I thought that would bring more interest to this twist rather than just have something that is going to be non-affected the whole way through the game until day 36. Love to hear your thoughts on this. Ciao.
Kurt, a couple of quick things. That can Gen X Jessica, if she gets voted out, say next tribal council, can she only give it to people on the Gen X tribe? Could she say, oh, I like that guy Zeke. I'd like him to get the idol. I hate everybody in my tribe. And then would Zeke just end up with this in his bag the next day? Or could it only be somebody that was in her tribe and at that tribal council?
I don't think it's clear on that. I mean, I'm sure that she knows, and I'm sure that the rules were explained to her. We as an audience don't know. I hadn't even thought about that, and I kind of like that as a possibility, especially if it's like ends up being a unanimous vote, because it's not like she has to designate somebody. She doesn't have to designate a survivor.
Survivor, yeah,
yes. prior to the votes being read, she can wait till. Oh, that was obviously a unanimous vote. I don't want to give it to anybody on my tribe, so I'll grant it to Zeke. I'll designate Zeke. So I'm not sure. My guess is it has to be somebody on their tribe. I don't think we know that. I'm also guessing that she can't just pull a Culpepper and throw it in the fire.
Put it in the fire.
Put it in the fire.
Yeah. Well, at some point, I would imagine we're going to have a swap, right? We're going to have people say Gen X Jessica, her best friend in the entire game is, say, Sunday, and Sunday ends up on the other tribe. Could she not give Sunday the legacy advantage if they end up on a swap tribe?
I think it's a fair question. I'm a little embarrassed. I didn't even think about that as the possibility.
Don't be embarrassed, Kurt. You're not the full-time Survivor podcaster of the two of us.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's something that I'm actually interested to find out, especially as you raise the point with some sort of shuffle prior to the merge, then seeing what could potentially be done with it. In terms of would it be better TV if it was openly exchanged?
Yes.
I think so. But I think once word gets out about how it works, I like the paranoia that gets kind of bruised.
Who has
in terms
it?
Of
who has,
yeah,
it?
Who has it? Like, we know Jessica had it. Who has it now? It's a little bit like if, you know, if the role of the mole rotated from week to week.
Yeah. Yes. Who is the designated survivor? Everybody's going to take a quiz today.
Yeah. Is Jessica then the current designated survivor because she has the legacy advantage?
Yes. She is the designated survivor with the advantage.
Well, if we co-opt that term for the rest of the season, I won't be mad.
Too bad that the designated survivor wouldn't get an advantage on day 24. That would have done full Kiefer. If Lisa Kiefer could have been the designated survivor and got an advantage on day 24.
Yeah, it did not work out that way, unfortunately. So I do like the idea of it becoming public. I don't know if we need necessarily to have the hand forced such that it gets passed along in a public way. I know that was one of my questions before it was revealed through outside survivor interviews of how it just kind of magically appears in somebody's bag. I was wondering how it would get passed along and if it would be in private.
So the way that it would work, so if she hands it off to somebody that's in her tribe, they just walk it over to them. But if she wants to send it to somebody in the millennial tribe, that it has to...
It come in a drone.
Yeah, it goes in a drone right over to the millennial tribe.
The legacy drone?
The legacy drone, yes. They hate drones on 24 also.
That's true. Lots of connections here.
I think once
word of it gets out, assuming word of it gets out, then I don't think it necessarily needs to be handed off in a public manner. I almost like the paranoia that kind of brews with that. I think Jessica needs to give it to David. I mean, let's just be completely honest, because if somebody is going to pretend, or at least let David know that this is something that exists, anything we can do to raise the paranoia level in Dave, I'm all for.
Very good. All right. So you brought up David. Let's talk a little bit about David and his big episode one. Really dominated the airtime in episode number one. Here's Johnny DeSilvera.
Hey, Rob and Kurt. Johnny DeSilvera in Vancouver. The edit made it appear that David was going to be the first boot, but Rachel ends up going home. And unless he seriously pivots, how far do you two see David going? I can't imagine the Gen Xers would allow him to get to the merge and possibly flip on them. Love to hear what you two think. Thanks. Love you, Bay.
Love you, Johnny DeSilvera. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about David, who really, I thought, you know, dominated the screen time, probably had the most confessionals of the night. I haven't looked at any of the charts, Kurt. My favorite part was when David was trying to make an alliance with Chris and with Brett, and he said,
"Dude, I like you. I trust you. I hope you trust me. If I hear your name come up, I'm gonna tell you. Chris, I trust you, okay? I trust you.
I got you, man. Just so you know, you and me, got you."
And then Kate and Connor come out of the woodwork and hand over the trust. Give me your hand. I'm giving you my trust.
Yes. I trust you. Yeah, which was the weirder trust ceremony this week in International Survivor, Kurt?
Ooh. I thought that the Kate Connor moment was kind of endearing.
Yeah.
I thought that the David thing was, I probably thought, just as Brett and Chris did, that it was very odd and very strange, but just going to nod along with it and go along with it.
Yeah. All right. We won't get into International Australian Survivor. I know people are going to get mad if we go too far down that rabbit hole. Okay. More on that with Steven to come on Tuesday. All right. So, Kurt, David had so many great moments in the episode. I talked about yesterday with Michelle about how he had some, I thought, valid points about he's afraid of dying. Brought up some good points there. And kudos to him for having the stick bug. At Tribal Council, though, he seemed very skittish about Jeff talking to him. Now, he's been compared to Cochran so much, but Cochran, like, really embraced that, where, you know, if Jeff said, "Okay, Cochran," I mean, Cochran was the kid on the first day who said, "Hey, don't call me John, please. I want to be called Cochran." And where if Jeff ever called on Cochran, I'm sure he would be like, "Oh, yeah, like, Jeff, yes, what is it?" Where David was very scared.
"David, oh, crap."
Yeah.
It's they both recognize they're kind of in a fish out of water story arc. It's just that Cochran is embracing it and David is scared of water and scared of fish.
Oh, crap.
Exactly. So yeah, it's definitely, I liked Michelle's comparison of him to a rescue puppy.
Mm-hmm.
it's very, very, very skittish. I don't necessarily think that there's, you know, concern that David will flip to the millennial tribe. I think that David will be loyal to people that he feels are going to look out for him.
I think he's the big wild card on this Gen X tribe. And I do feel like that it's not necessarily the most colorful tribe that we've ever had. I think that maybe when we get the millennials going to tribal council, I think that we may see some more fireworks. But he is the real X factor, I think, in this group. And I think that he's the person that really could shake things up, especially from a strategic perspective. I think that everybody else is going to be pretty much by the book. He's the one person, I think, that could really be shaking up some of these tribal councils once he gets his feet under him.
Yeah, I think potentially. I mean, we do see, like, between, you know, I'm thinking back to Holly Hoffman and other players who had a really rough go in the you even talked about, you know, Aubrey kind of broke down a little bit in the first episode of last season, in the first couple episodes. So you do have this history of people who end up going quite far having a very rough patch at the beginning, but you just as frequently have the early breakdowns that also result in early boots. So it's kind of which way is he going to go? I could see him potentially going far, especially the fact that he only got from what we thought was going to be a Rachel versus Dave vote scenario at tribal council. It ended up being a Rachel versus Cece vote scenario. So I think Dave's good for at least a couple of votes. It's just a matter of whether or not he can kind of take those, the you know, worst case scenario, potentially 6 days that he has before he's truly on the chopping block and something might happen.
Kurt, I didn't think the episode made it super clear as to why they ended up saving David. Were you surprised at all by that?
Yeah, it was a mix of why they saved David and why they targeted Cece. I mean, we did see Cece.
Well, to me, I thought it was a vote split. I thought that they were just that they wanted to get Rachel out, and then they put a couple votes on Cece just in case that there was an idol being played.
I agree, but I'd expected the vote split to be between Dave and Rachel. So yes. I think those the three votes for Cece surprised me, except for the fact that leading up to that, we did see Rachel and Cece off to the side by themselves, kind of, again, observing what was going on with everybody else and wondering why they weren't being included. And so, you know, Cece was kind of Rachel's right-hand person. But, you know, seeing that she got three votes and then her, who was assumed, you know, presumably her main ally went home, I think right now there's a bigger, you know, if there was to be a shuffle tomorrow, or next time, they would not obviously do. But I think right now, in terms of who's in danger of flipping, it would probably be Cece over Dave.
Cece over Dave.
But yeah, I don't know why they chose not to target Dave unless they just explicitly believed and ended up believing his story prior to tribal council that he didn't end up having an immunity idol. I don't think they stopped targeting him because of fear of an idol.
Yeah, it is weird if they're splitting votes around and there's some concern that he has the idol, why he wouldn't be one of the two names that they're putting out there for this vote split.
Although, like, with somebody who's so seems to be kind of so on the outs like Dave and who is you know, obviously not tight with anybody at this point. If you had a couple other potential targets and you wondered if he had an idol, you know, that's also potentially somebody to align with. I mean, somebody that you think has the idol who's not really aligned with anybody, who there's a couple people in the tribe that you think are going to go potentially before him. At least get on his good side. Just because somebody has the idol, I don't think the initial reaction should immediately be to target them. Like, assess whether or not there's room in your organization to include them.
Yeah. I also think that based on a confessional from Chris, he is like, yeah, there's this guy, David, and I really like the guy. He's funny sometimes, but he's way too paranoid. And I wonder if they feel like, okay, well, maybe if we can just get him to not be paranoid, maybe they sort of like, he's a charismatic guy. Maybe they like him. They want to keep him around, where maybe there's just no chemistry between Cece and Rachel and the rest of that group.
Potentially. And what's even going to be worse is, you know, splitting the vote, putting three votes on Dave and five on Rachel, and then having Dave stay and say, no, you have no reason to be paranoid. Well, of course you do. You just got three votes, and if Rachel had an idol, you would have gone home. So why did you target Dave? So I think by not putting any votes on him, I think what was Rachel was the only person who voted for Dave, or Cece was the only person who voted for Dave. I can't remember which one. By not putting any of the majority votes on Dave, you know, potentially that reins in his paranoia a little bit, and he becomes more tolerable around camp?
Potentially, that could be a way that he ends up sticking around, at least until the swap. And then hopefully, if he gets to the merge, he's the kind of guy that then you're not really worried about at that point in time. But we'll see. Hopefully, I think that the season's a lot more fun if David sticks around.
I think so, too.
All right. One other thing on David. This is from Graham from the Bay Area, from the Love You Bay Area. Here is Graham.
Hey, what's up, Rob? It's Graham from the Bay Area. And I got a question about David Wright. Of the many bad things he did in the premiere, one of them was trying to ambush Ken with the threat of him having an idol. Now, this move didn't do anything for him, but could this move have worked? In the early stages of the game, when everyone's looking for an excuse to get rid of somebody, could this idol ambush tactic be a potentially good move for somebody in the game? Love to get your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Kurt, which way do you think he means? The idea of, hey, he's got an idol, we just saw him, let's go up to him and ambush him in that way? Or the idea of just throwing the word out there like, oh, that guy, he just found an idol. He's got an idol.
I think the latter. I don't think David was confrontational enough to do it.
And Brett went with him, right, he would have been.
Right. I think David said it. I'm not completely convinced that David didn't believe. I think, you know, David may have thought he saw something. David definitely thought he saw something. By throwing it out there, I think his only intent was to, you know, create mistrust. And at least say, hey, here's a potential target. I don't think he counted on Brett and Chris kind of saying, hey, let's go talk to Ken and ask him. I think David probably wouldn't have necessarily wanted that confrontation, even if Brett and Chris, because it could potentially come back on him. Well, you know, David, I could see Brett or Chris throwing out, well, David said he saw you pick up something, and then suddenly David's bad in Ken's book. So I think his intent was just to kind of at least say, hey, there's somebody we need to keep our eye on. Is it a good idea to do it solely for strategic reasons? And like, even if you don't see anything, what was it back on Blood versus Water? Second one, did Keith say that he saw Jeremy find an idol or something like that?
In San Juan del Sur, you're right that Keith said he did think that Jeremy had the idol. And then I think it was Reed who went back to Jeremy and told Jeremy. And then ironically, with Jeremy again in Cambodia, Stephen Fishback told Andrew Savage, after Andrew Savage's very emotional, heartfelt story about how he met his beautiful wife, then Stephen Fishback, like, Jeremy went off to go and he was emotional. And Stephen said, hey, I think Jeremy's looking for the idol over there. And then again, somebody went back and told Jeremy about this. So it's always Jeremy.
Yeah. Historically, it doesn't really necessarily go that well. Yeah. I think you have to read the room a bit, potentially. And I think even here, you got a little bit of a sense that Brett and Chris are like, okay, David. Whatever, David. Like, I don't know from the timeline how much David's paranoia had become very full and obvious to the rest of the tribe. So I don't necessarily know that it didn't seem like Brett and Chris bought it. And the only reason that you said, well, let's go ask him, was maybe to even like shut Dave up. I don't think there's an upside, especially so early in the game. I think that's potentially overplaying and getting a little bit cute with the game. Yeah. Especially when you're just getting to know people. And it could turn out that 3 days in, you see that, you know, Ken is actually a great person to potentially align with, especially when you're kind of floating alone like Dave is. And at that point, you may have, like, you know, poisoned the well a bit. I personally see limited upside to trying to suggest somebody has the idol, especially as we've seen, it will often get back to that person what you're doing.
I also think that the better way to do it, this sort of has the same intention, is, you know, if you're in the Steven spot of, hey, has anybody seen Jeremy? Does anybody know where Jeremy is? And then have somebody else say, like, yeah, he's been gone a while, right? Like, yeah, that's weird. You know, and just have, like, you know, have the, you know, be feeding, but don't necessarily ever be the person who comes out with the accusation. I think, because then it's like, oh, well, Rob said that you were looking for the idol. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I just said, where is Jeremy?
Yeah. Ask the question. Don't supply the answer. Be the figgy who is constantly keeping her eyes on where everybody is.
Yes. Yes. Bring the horse to the water, but don't, just, you know, don't shove their face in it.
Exactly.
All right. So, Kurt, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at Blue Apron. And, Kurt, I know you are a big Blue Apron fan.
Yeah, it's funny because like literally 10 minutes before recording, I had my Blue Apron delivery for the week arrive at my door. So yeah. It's currently, luckily it comes with those ice packs, those cooling packs.
Yes.
So it's sitting on the counter in my kitchen. I've yet to, sometimes I'll go a full 24 hours before I unpack it and put it in the fridge. But
and it's fine, right? It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
I don't know if that's recommended, but it's fine.
It's fine.
Of course, that Blue Apron, if you're wondering, it delivers food to your door that you get to prepare healthy, easy to put together meals, much easier than these 60, 70 piece puzzles that the survivors have to deal with. They do not come delivered via drone yet at this time. I guess it's the best of the Gen Xers and the millennials all in one, as you get for less than $10 a meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. And they know when you cook with incredible ingredients, you can make incredible meals that set the highest quality standards for a community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron brings you the best, Kurt.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Korean pork tacos tonight.
Look at you. Yeah. They've got variety, flexibility, and of course, they're easy to prepare with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipes and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. That's like what? Like a third of a podcast?
There you go.
Yeah, so check out this week's menu. You get your first three meals for free with free shipping. Go to blueapron.com/Rob. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/Rob. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, not Cook Islands, Kurt. Let's get into another question. This is from Lawson, who thinks that maybe there's something that's coincidental about this week's episode.
Hey, Rob and Kurt. This is Lawson, and I'm wondering, do you guys think it's ironic that for the first time in 33 seasons of Survivor, the castaways were evacuated from the island on the same episode that Kurt Clark is on the voicemails? This has to be the Clark curse, right?
Wow.
The moment the word 30, the first time in 33 episodes, it's,
you knew
seasons, I knew where it was going. Thank you, Lawson.
Yeah. All right, that was a quick one. A nod to the Clark curse. Are there any shows this fall that you're going to be checking out that you think that you might be putting the Clark curse on? Or do you have to podcast about it? Is it just if you watch the show?
It's typically if I podcast about it. So there's nothing in the reality TV lineup for the fall that that I see that's coming. There's certain shows that I think are doomed from the start anyway. So we'll see how many of them stick around.
Okay. All right. Let's check in with our buddy Gregory, who has a question, a bit of a follow-up to our previous podcast, Kurt.
What's up, Robin, Kurt? It is Gregory McBean. I have a question about your first boot draft from a couple weeks ago in the off season. I want to know if you would trade Rachel for anyone on your team. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. This is an interesting question, Kurt. Of course, we did a podcast in our off season Survivor podcast series where we drafted teams of all the first boots and of the 29, 28 people that were eligible. We each came away with five people from the teams. Kurt, do you have that handy at all? The list of who we have on our first boot teams?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
All right. So the teams were who? So let's just do my team and your team.
You had Timbertina.
Timbertina.
Jessica DeBen?
Jessica DeBen, yes.
Jolanda Jones, Zane Knight, and Nicole Delma.
All right. And then, Kurt, you had?
I had Ryan Aiken, So Kim, Courtney.
That was pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Chicken Morris. I gave you some time for that one. And Deb Eaton.
Okay. All right. So, Kurt, if you had the option, if you had a designated survivor to plug in, would you go fish and throw back one of the people on your team to add Rachel Aiko to your team.
I think in your podcast with Michelle, you had said that there wasn't really much visibility into why Rachel necessarily left. I mean, yeah, there was that little moment with Paul when they were digging the hole, but she didn't seem like she necessarily...
Can I touch on that moment with Paul? Because that was a really fun moment, I grabbed that. This was from when Rachel was digging the hole with Paul in the episode.
How far down do you want to dig it?
Not that far.
How far is not that far? Like
6 inches.
Yeah. How far is not that far? That's one to keep on file.
Good to know.
Good to know. In case you're ever asked, how far is not that far?
How far is not that far? Like
6 inches.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, I'm sorry, Kurt. Sorry to interrupt.
I knew what you were going to play there. Because my notes said the same thing.
Oh, crap.
The big question is whether I swap in... Oh, damn you, Sister Nino. Whether I swap in Rachel for Deb Eaton. And I just have so much love for Deb, I don't think I could do it. Yeah. I think it's just too much... I think it's just kind of too much of a question mark, and I don't think I would necessarily go up in things if I did swap her in. Fewer people would have voted for my lineup had that been the way I went, because you would have gotten rid of the Deb Eaton legacy.
See, I think if I had that team, Kurt, I think that I would have her sub her in for a couple of people. The problem is that my team is so strong, and I think that all my people could win. But I do feel like that if they were playing a second time, that could Rachel correct whatever went wrong the first time? Because I don't think it was a disaster. We didn't see anything right. That was a disaster or even a disaster in terms of her performance out there in these first 3 days. So she was with a group that she really didn't get along with. She had said in the exit interview with me, she thought she would have done better had there been more young people around. I think that she does feel like, I think she's like 37, but I think she comes off as like a younger 37. So I feel like that in this group, it wasn't really set up well for her. And I think that she maybe learned something about like, oh, I need to not be as opinionated. So maybe, Kurt, is there enough there where in a second time out, she could correct whatever was going wrong here, maybe get her feet under her in this game and be a contender?
Possibly, because we did talk about during the first boot draft that there are those people who, they were kind of a victim of circumstance. Francesca coming back without the specialist being around. Like, you know, that was be a completely different set of circumstances for her versus people who are just, you know, are probably going to repeat their mistakes.
Right.
I do think that because we have like so little information on really why Rachel went, I do think that she would likely not be a first boot a second time.
Well, and we have to wait for David Bloomberg to get on here to tell us why Rachel lost. But that'll
be interesting
coming on Tuesday. So I think with my team, if I was going
to
sub her in for somebody, I mean, I think I have a lot of safe picks between the Jessica DeBenn and Yolanda and Nicole Delma, people who I don't think would have been first boots if they were in another scenario. I think that Zane, that was like my high upside pick of the guy who could be Tony Vlachos in another world, but also easily could be the first boot again. I think that I might take him off the table. If I was going to pull one of my people back, I think maybe Rachel could fit into sort of like these safer picks with the Jessica DeBenn and Nicole Delma and Yolanda. And maybe if she was in a typical season, then maybe I'd put her there in that spot.
If I had to swap her in, I would swap her in for Deb.
Yeah.
But
Ryan Aiken's not so bad either, Kurt.
That's cheap.
That was pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Never gets old. All right. All right, let's keep going. Let's talk about some other things. This is a question from Max from Michigan, wants to know about the little part of the game where they got to decide what things they were going to take with them.
So on the know-it-alls yesterday, we had both Steven and Tyson agree that fishing gear is better than chickens. And Gen X thought so too. Am I crazy here? I think chickens are way better. We all know there's going to be a swap after about 4 episodes. So there's going to be about a 50% chance that you give away your fishing gear to your opponents. Who wants that? Why not just pick the chickens, eat the chickens, win the game? What do you think?
All right, Kurt. Is fishing gear better than a chicken?
Max sounded like a millennial, and me being a Gen Xer, I agree with Stephen and Tyson. And what was it, Taylor? Chickens lay eggs.
Yeah, Taylor, I guess so.
Taylor pointed that out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just you also, I think the concept of killing the chicken for food in Survivor is probably a lot more appealing than the reality of killing a chicken for food on Survivor.
Yeah.
So, and plus, I think on day one, you're not necessarily. I like the Gen X approach of kind of thinking long term and like, let's do something that's going to kind of feed us potentially a little bit more consistently.
All right, Kurt, let's do something really nerdy. Let's do the pros and cons of fishing gear versus chickens. Okay.
Okay. Or is this where I take one side, you take the other? Or we just kind of we fill in slots on.
We're gonna debate. Well, yeah. let's throw the list out there for us. Okay. All right. Okay. So the pros of the chicken. How many chickens was it?
It looked like three.
Okay.
Maybe. Let's go with three.
Okay.
Even whether or not it's true.
All right. Pro of the chicken, that if you can be friends with it and keep it around the whole game, Sia will come to the finale and give you money. That is a pro.
Yes.
So Sia, friendship.
Friendship.
Friendship. Okay. So that's a possibility.
That's a possibility.
So you have Sia upside.
Sia upside. are we still doing upsides?
Sure.
Okay. You can't name fishing gear, so I guess I guess you can name chickens.
You can. That's an upside, I guess.
That's an upside.
The problem is that once you name the chickens, then people are reluctant to eat them. I think that, like, in the first Survivor, they got three chickens. They called it breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That was fine. They were sort of, like, identified as food the whole time. But if these chickens start to identify as characters on the show and they get in the opening credits, all of a sudden, you're a murderer when you kill Mark the chicken on day 27. He was lunch on day 3.
See a downside.
Right. See a downside. So that's a con for the chicken. That, you know, social justice is going to come crashing down for you when you kill a beloved cast member on day 27.
Right. And chicken is a gender neutral term. Like, they could have gotten like three male chickens in there. I mean, they weren't necessarily egg laying hens. I mean, let's hope that the producers weren't real jerks about that. But I guess another upside is if these are extremely fertile myrtles and
are you fertile and ready to myrtle?
Yeah. then, you know, yeah, but, you know, best case scenario is like you wake up every morning and that little coop is exploding with eggs. It's likely not going to happen. You might get a couple. But there is kind of literally three birds in the hand is to the millennial tribe worth more than the questionable.
Okay.
Birds
so
the
you're
bush.
Saying that the eggs, the constant flow of eggs is one of the pros.
Constant flow of eggs with the singular flow of chicken once the egg flow has stopped.
Yeah. Then to go back to the fishing gear, just, you know, the pros are that if you have somebody out there who can do spearfishing, then that's good. I'm assuming that Paul knows how to do it, I guess.
He's probably found some spearfishing equipment while treasure hunting.
Yes, you would think so. He does have like the Rupert build, so that's fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
And the fishing gear has a learning curve, whereas killing a chicken doesn't.
Yes. I'm sure there's some learning curve. The chicken can run away. That's happened quite a few times that the chicken gets away on
but
Survivor.
If you do it wrong and don't do it, like, then your chances to do it again are really limited by the number of chickens that are left, is all I'm saying.
Who counted those chickens before they hatched? And then also, actually, that the chicken in the first Survivor, they got eaten by like a monitor lizard. It wasn't even that they ran away. But they do fly away sometimes. Also, we have with the fishing gear, sometimes you could lose the tip of the spear. Yes.
And you don't want to lose the tip of the spear.
Ideally, you don't want to lose
it. Don't want down. Do you want to
No. Stop. Then we had like Rupert, remember when they, who touched my spear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So angering Rupert, if he were to show up as like a reward.
Yeah, you could anger Rupert.
Survivor, was that Survivor Israel?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to angry Rupert, downside.
Yes. Also, Kurt, I don't think that this cyclone is going to be too good for the fishing.
I don't. Yeah, is.
Ideally, I think you don't want to go out spearfishing in a cyclone.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if you had meant that all the fish would swim away from the cyclone zone, so it just wouldn't be any there.
Well, both. I think
I don't know how that works ecologically. I might pull a Monica Padilla here and be afraid of like that we're going to get rid of all the fish in the lagoon. So I don't know if that's something to be.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what you meant with pull a Monica Padilla.
Well, yeah, you know, she was scared of all the clams or oysters farmed. Like I think there's going to be more of that supply of fish. I think that I'm picturing a scenario where the fish are somehow like driven to the area from this because of the storm. I don't know, Mike. I wasn't in a aqua life ecology major.
All right, Kurt. So you're saying that you are team chicken?
No, I'm team fishing gear just because I think of the increased likelihood of repeatedly eating and being able to learn the art of fishing. Whereas I think the reality of killing a chicken and eating it is a lot different from the concept of doing so.
Yeah, I think that Taylor's being a little pie in the sky with how many times the chickens lay eggs on Survivor. I feel like that if you get like one or two eggs in 39 days, I feel like that that's a lot on Survivor. I do think that in a perfect world, you take the fishing gear and you have somebody who knows how to use it and they're able to bring back a lot of fish. Like you have like a Richard Hatch or a Rupert or somebody that could go out there and bring back a lot of stuff for your tribe, that the limited amount of food that you would get, I mean, you could completely bomb out. There's like a risk there with the fishing gear where you could like, there's nothing out there. We're getting nothing. Like when Penner said he was going to be able to catch fish in Philippines where they took the sandwiches and traded their rice away.
True.
Don't worry. I'll go out there. How hard could it be?
It's also something you could potentially, which you're going to want to practice more before going out on Survivor. You know, you're going to, you know, practice your fire starting skills, hopefully. And potentially if you're like near a large body of water, just kind of practice using like the technique and the motion of using a fishing spear. You're not going to necessarily want to kind of practice repeatedly the art and technique of killing a chicken.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We spent too much time on this. Let's keep moving. Okay. So, all right. This is a question for you, Kurt, and this comes to us from Andrew, who wants to know about everybody's favorite new alliance, the Triforce.
Hey, Robin, Kurt. This is Andrew Kurt calling from California. My question is, if the millennials go to tribal council, who from the Triforce do you think will be Shannon Elkins? And who from the Triforce do you think will be the Chase Rice going all the way to the end? I feel like if they go to tribal council, I feel like there's a good possibility that we get a turn with that alliance. Love to give you guys a thoughts on that. Thanks.
Boy. It's like a real Robert Frost poem of there were two survivors. One went on to be Shannon Elkins. The other went on to be Chase Rice. Which one will be which?
This is a real 0-1 scenario, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit more shades of gray than that, but like gun to head, I'm getting the sense that I potentially see Jay going further than Taylor.
Now, Kurt, who is going to end up in the showmance? I felt like it was going to be Taylor who ends up trying to be in the showmance with Figgy.
I agree.
Yes.
I think at the same time, I think Figgy, I think that Taylor's going to be more into it than she is.
Yeah. Okay. So you think that it's going to be some sort of like unrequited Big Brother 16 beast mode cowboy. I'm not sure if we're allowed to talk about that. Again, I don't know if there's like a statute of limitations if you're not allowed to talk about the Big Brother version of beast mode cowboy, but so you think that it could be that he has a thing for her, Figgy does not have a thing for him, and how does it end?
Yeah, well, I think it could be a very, very immediate marriage of convenience.
Okay.
But with Figgy potentially being
the alpha.
And the beta potentially being cut well before the merge.
Kurt, are you into the Triforce Alliance?
I'm all about Legend of Zelda, so let's go Triforce.
Okay. Well, Kurt, that hopefully you're so into the Triforce that you'll be able to enjoy this from Shut Up Tim.
Oh, no.
J-Bro, Tails, and Figgy are the Triforce.
by force and with namaste. Their alliance can only be described as such. I think there's another minute of this, Kurt.
thankfully.
Yeah.
Because I think if you play the game, like the game, the tune just goes on in the game anyway.
Right. This is a minute and 34 seconds from Tim. This is a minute and 20 in. Just goes on and on.
I'm trying to avoid making a dink to the past reference for Taylor, but. I definitely see if we're doing again the Shannon versus Chase thing, I see Jay going further than Taylor, but I don't want to draw too many parallels between Taylor and Shannon. I don't necessarily paint them with the same brush.
Can you milk him? Yeah. All right. So then let's go ahead and I have a new segment idea, Kurt.
Oh no.
Okay.
What was it David said to Probst?
Oh, crap.
Yes. Okay. That's my reaction. A new segment. We're calling this the participation trophy the participation trophy voicemail of the week. This is a voicemail that somebody tried. It did not work, but I'm going to play it anyway. Our participation trophy for voicemail of the week.
Rob, it's me, Uncle Diaz from Australia. And I have a question. What's the better choice for Survivor? Survivor Francesca versus Five Piece Puzzle? Survivor David Wright versus The Stick? Or Survivor Stephen Fishback versus The Branch? And by the way, sometimes I don't really like Rachel, and I don't really like these millennials, because as a first boot, I'm better TV than Rachel. Thank you.
All right, Kurt, what do you think of the new segment?
Thumbs up to the new segment. I remember at one point, I think, over the summer...
Yes.
You tweeted something about how podcast apps don't need a half speed. I typically listen at double speed. I think that would sound normal speed at double speed.
Yes.
I think you don't typically think of Australians speaking that slowly. I think what I found very amusing about that was the slow and deliberate in pacing is not something I associate with the Australian language.
All right, so Kurt, what would be the better season? Franny versus the Five Piece Puzzle, David Wright versus the Stick, or Stephen Fishback versus the Branch?
I forgot there was actually a question in there.
I think that's what the question was.
There's a lot to unpack.
Kurt, how far down did we go?
Not that far.
How far is not that far? Like
6 inches.
Yeah.
I think we went about 6 inches.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to have to give it to currently. I would say Dave versus the Stick.
Okay.
So let's run that up the flagpole.
There you go. All right, Kurt, and then I have one more voicemail question, and this comes to us from our good buddy Syrup Guy. Syrup Guy is back, and he has a question.
What's up, Rob and Kurt? It's Syrup Guy calling from Canada. I was hoping you guys could do a power ranking after the first episode. Let's do the top five, baby. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Top five, baby. Kurt, what I'd like to do is set up a top four, baby. And I would like to do that with our good friends over at PickPete.com, where you could play season-long fantasy and just set it and forget it. You pick your top four people at the beginning of the season, and then that's it. And then at the end of the season, we see who did the best in the entire world.
Dang.
Yeah.
wasn't quite sure how to respond to that last one.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
So, Kurt, now you, I know for a fact that you have been playing Fantasy Survivor for a long time.
Yeah, I've run quite a few leagues. To answer this top four question, I'm looking to see who the 30 players in the league I'm running now, who they threw kind of all of their considerable votes behind.
Yeah.
In terms of drafting tribes. So I've got my top four.
Now, I bet that's a lot of work for you, Kurt, to administer a Survivor Fantasy League.
Yeah, if only there was an easier way to do it.
Yeah. Well, we've been using this. We did it for Big Brother over the summer, pickpete.com. You just pick out your top four people, and then you go ahead and lock them in. And then at the end of the season, you can have bragging rights to all of your friends. They look at I called this. This was the top four. Three out of my top four made it this far. So look at me. You guys are all a bunch of idiots. So, Kurt, for this exercise, I will, for the real, I will make my pickpete roster right now. And then okay. At the end of the season, you can say you did better than me, which you probably will, or you did worse than me. And I guess they say, well, I guess that this guy does know what he's talking about. All right. So, Kurt, all right. So can I get your assistance here in setting the official top four Pick Pete team on Rob as a podcast? Who are our top four power rankings? Top four, baby.
Okay. You get first right of refusal on any of these, obviously.
Yes. No, we're working together. We're collaborating here, Kurt.
Do you think that Zeke being burned out too brightly in the first episode, in terms of, like, was he too much of a presence to put him in top four?
No, I do not. I have no issue with that. Pick Zeke of Pick adding Zeke. Him, that he was very good. I think universally a fan favorite so far.
Okay, and if we go from A to Zeke, what do you think about throwing Adam in there as well?
Adam. No, I think that he is too positive. He's too positive. I feel like that this game is going to take him down a peg.
Okay. The other name I would throw out there is Mari.
Mari. Yeah, she's good. She's good, Mari. I liked her. Okay, I'm going to put her on the short list. Then we can move these people around.
Okay.
Well, we don't have probably, to. We don't need to name the order. We just need to name the top four.
Okay. We should probably throw a couple Gen Xers in there, though.
Yes. All right. Well, Chris was my winner pick, and I didn't see anything in this episode to disqualify him.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to put him in my top four.
What do you? How risky do you feel?
Risky? I'm into risk. Kurt, I have literally nothing to lose.
That's other true. Than yeah.
People might think I am slightly worse of a Survivor analyst, but that's hardly possible.
Yeah. Let's talk about Sunday.
Sunday? No.
Well, I think I think there was a lot of fear that she had first boot upside.
Oh. No, I like where you're going with this.
And I think that you seemed, even in your interview with Michelle, that you were pleasantly surprised a bit at how she seemed to fit in. Her and Lucy weren't necessarily part of the core group who was making decisions, but I would say potentially either Sunday or our legacy designated survivor, Jessica.
Yeah. Well, what I do like about Sunday is that I think that this might be a good chance to ace a final three spot, because you're going to have that one person who sits there and then just gets chewed out in front of the jury. And Sunday could well be that person, especially if I don't need to pick a winner. If I just need to pick a top four, then I could have Sunday in there. And I feel like that there's a definite reasonable chance that she's just sitting there as a zero vote finalist or a one vote finalist in the final three.
Yeah. Now, would you pick Sunday Berquist, or would you pick any given Sunday?
Sunday Berquist. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. All right. So Zeke, Mari, Chris, Sunday. I'm going to lock it. You don't have to lock your roster until the start of Wednesday night's episode on pickpete.com, but I'm going to hit submit and I'm going to set it and forget it. And that's it, Kurt. Now we'll see. Watch these be the next four people that get kicked out of the game, but I've set this up. You can play against us at pickpete.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. All right, Kurt, are you ready to switch gears? And for the first time this season, going to talk about what's going on in the world of Survivor social media.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
I'm so glad you didn't say no. I'm really glad. That would have been very awkward. Tweets, baby, tweets. Gen X tweets. They're better than the booming crash of a machete. Tweets. Better than the booming crash of a machete.
Sorry, what was? I just had my hands over my ears that whole time. What did you say?
Yes. Are you scared of a machete at all? I mean, I am scared of a machete, but not like it banging on wood.
I'm scared. Like, don't. Okay. I don't want to be. Yeah, exactly. Don't be. I don't like blood. I think that's right up there with being afraid of death. But getting sliced is not something that I would look forward to. So yeah, don't go swinging a machete near me.
Yeah, it's not the noise with the machete. It's like the sharp edge that's like swinging very quickly. Yeah. I feel like that's what I'm very afraid of.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, Kurt. So many Survivor tweets. Of course, the premiere always brings out the best from everybody in the Survivor community. And Jeff Probst was live tweeting up a storm about everything. I saw one of the tweets that Jeff Probst had following the episode. He was asked about what's with these photos of the survivors this season, which we talked about quite a bit in the preseason. He said they tried something different. He doesn't think it worked. Next season, they'll go back to regular photos.
Yeah, poor Lucy.
Poor Lucy with that photo. I still don't know what they were thinking. Okay. Yeah. All right. So why don't we start off with Jessica Lewis at Jessica Lewis 89. Of course, 9 times 9 is 89. At Jessica Lewis 89. That she tweeted out, currently not feeling very purple. #Survivor. #Survivor MVX. #RHAP.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes. Responding to the early criticism that she could be boring.
Yeah, wouldn't say that it was that Purple Kelly was boring as much as she just was invisible.
Yes.
Definitely a lot of screen time and for our designated survivor. And I was very pleased with Jessica's performance in week one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very excited to see that Jessica is showing us. Look, we love to be wrong. Well, there's nothing I love more than to be wrong on this show.
I love the things I'm good at, and I'm good at being wrong. So
good at being wrong.
Yeah.
So what's going on with Jessica's eye condition?
Oh, the Costa syndrome.
That syndrome. Is that the official name of it?
That's that Stephen and Tyson kind of referenced the Bob Costas.
Yes. I didn't know that was the official medical term.
Well, that's what I'm calling it.
Yeah.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
It's like we're watching 28 Days Later or Survivor. Mm-hmm. And there was that one TV series where it's like, what happens if a zombie outbreak happened on Big Brother UK? This is potentially, day 3 on Survivor 33. So we'll see if this outbreak spreads.
All right. Let's check in with Stephen Fishback, the aforementioned Stephen Fishback, who tweeted, weren't Cyclones also the villain in Battlestar Galactica?
Oh, Stephen. I'm hoping that was intentional.
All right. Then Eliza, she tweeted, the Triforce? What is this? Big Brother? Shots fired.
It is true, though. I think I even was like, you don't often get alliances named in Survivor, let alone alliances that are named using a number.
Piss? Yeah.
Yeah.
Shots fired by Eliza.
I do.
The alliance name.
I do hope this is not the dawn of maybe that's a millennial thing, but I hope that this isn't like a start of a new trend where now suddenly every alliance on Survivor also gets a name.
What do you think it is about Big Brother versus Survivor where we see more named alliances on Big Brother than Survivor?
You're bored more.
You're bored. You're bored.
Yeah. Your boy is bored.
Yeah.
we had the Three Amigos. So it has reared its head in the past before.
There have been named alliances and Four Horsemen and stuff like that. But it just feels like that any time two people come to an agreement on Big Brother, it's like the next question. Okay, what's the name? What's the name of this?
And they'll spend 2 hours on the show or like 2 hours on the feeds sitting around a circle, basically brainstorming and seeing what sticks.
I just wonder is it organic where it comes from the house guests or is it more something from in the diary room that they're saying, okay, well, what are you going to name this alliance? We see the live feeds. I feel like that's probably more organic.
I think you just got like actual, food and shelter to worry about on Survivor. There's a cyclone coming. Let's not necessarily worry about sitting around coming up with names.
So name is very far down on the chart of human needs?
The Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
How far down is it, Kurt?
Not that far.
How far is not that far? Like
6 inches.
Just 6 inches down. Okay.
Yeah, 6 inches, like right below self-actualization, is named, is naming your alliance.
Okay. All right, Randy Bailey, he tweeted out, "It only took 31 minutes. I hate all of them." That didn't take long. 31 minutes is actually pretty good for Randy, I think.
That is pretty good.
Especially on a season full of millennials.
I'm sure if we sat him down, he could find one or two that he liked. But I get where he's coming from.
I think if we were ever going to do an all-star millennials versus Gen X, I think that Randy is a must-have for the all-star Gen X tribe.
Yes, definitely.
He would be fantastic. I mean, he would knock Paul out of the water in terms of, like, let me tell you about these millennials. It's great. He'd be great. All right. Randy also said, whether he stays or goes, David Wright is possibly the worst player in Survivor history. That's not fair, Randy.
Yeah. No, Wendy Jo? What?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, he was bad, definitely, in terms of his social game. But he managed to go to a tribal council and not get voted out, which is more than many other players can say. So his paranoia is a disaster, but you definitely get the sense that he knows the game to a degree. And so you feel like that if he can just get over this one thing, then maybe there is upside for him. So I do not agree with Randy.
I mean, he's lucky that he landed in a tribe with basically 9 other calm, rational people. Seemingly. I'm sure that, like, if I dug deeper, and just at first glance, it's like I'm still thinking back to Brett and Chris just kind of, okay, Dave, you know, yeah, he may have an idol. Should we go see if he has an idol? No? Okay, well, let's just... I get the feeling there's a lot of people who are just rolling with the punches when it comes to Dave. He could have landed in a much worse spot, I think, in terms of who he's working with.
So far, so good. Yeah. All right. Bryce Isaiah, the freakiest freak.
Man.
Yeah. He tweeted, Aunt Cece was over it. She was over it pretty quick after they voted out her friend Rachel. Then he also said, clearly I'd be a freak. They talk about the freaks and geeks in the millennial tribe.
Yep, yep.
Then also Bryce said, they always so hyped to split the vote on the first vote now. I don't get it.
They came out there to play Survivor. I think that's how... you know, it's, I don't know if David's paranoia became infectious.
No, much like the Gen X Jessica's eye.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It's paranoia is a symptom of the strain of red eye, of pink eye that she's carrying.
T-Bird tweeted out, she was live tweeting the show, keep the machete away from Rachel Aiko or somebody's going to get hurt. ... Paul. Watch out. Is Paul going to get hurt?
Potentially. I mean, We did see, you know, Rachel wanted to swing the war club during the challenge to smash that mask. She's got some fire in her.
Also, T-Bird tweeted out, this is the tweet that I'm reading. She says, Vanuatu tribe down for some real fun. Let's get Cyclone ready after our swim party. I don't think that T-Bird has the tribe name correctly. I do not believe it is the Vanuatu tribe.
No, it's the Vavau tribe, right?
I do not believe it's even the Vavau tribe.
Oh.
I mean, that she's closer than I am. I know it does start with a V, but I'm pretty sure it is not the Vanuatu tribe.
Right. Maybe that was just autocorrect on her.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That could
be. She said it so many times, it now just recommends it for her whenever she starts typing with something with a V.
Yes. But no, it is not the Vanuatu tribe. Yeah, it is the Vanua tribe, not Vanuatu.
Oh, she's really close.
She's close. She's close. Okay. Then Cass McEwen, she tweeted out, is David pulling a Zane?
I don't think so.
That's why I'm going to pull him for Rachel.
Oh, so your decision was based on that earlier. I see.
Yeah. I think that maybe Cass was informed.
Oh, potentially.
If anything, David was pulling a David Samson.
There you go.
How about this card? This is interesting. Julia Sokolowski, she tweeted out, my roommate said, can you go on Survivor Reddit to find out who banged?
No, stop.
Wow. Julia Sokolowski. I mean, can you, Kurt? Is there probably somewhere? We have to ask Adam.
Yeah, that's the Redditor. Potentially, I guess. I don't know. Are you talking about like after the show or during the show?
Yeah. I think you can find that out somewhere. I think if you ask, I think they'll tell you. I think that's possibly. I think that it would be, you know what? If I needed to know, that would probably be the first place I might go.
So Adam's tribe would ask Reddit, whereas the Gen X tribe would ask Jeeves, probably. Is that right?
Yeah.
Different sources? Different info sources?
Yes. Boy, no survivor is as engaged in the battle of the millennials versus the Gen Xers than Gen X Jerv. Gen X Jerv is very wrapped up in the battle of the generations.
Ask Jervs.
Ask Jervs. Yeah. Gen X Jerv, he tweeted out, Jeff, I hope you're coming to kick all the millennials out of the game. They are annoying AF.
That's not nice.
Yeah. He said, millennials, so far, you're keeping true to form. That's a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah, how much of I think do you think Randy's and Jervis's reaction to the millennial tribe is fueled by the Triforce?
The Triforce, possibly. Yeah. That is possible. I thought you were going to say, how much are they campaigning to potentially be recruited for All-Stars Gen X versus Millennials?
That could be it as well. Because I think that even primarily Taylor is maybe kind of driving the quote-unquote bad image. But I thought Mari was good. I thought Hannah was good. I don't know where I stand with Michaela. Her whole evacuation, is that a bad thing? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what I think of her yet. But I think there's some good eggs, and not just from the chickens on the millennial strip.
Jervis wasn't done.
He said,
if the millennials all start crying because my man Brooklyn made a fire, I'm done. He also said, I'm not going to lie, Triforce is a whack name.
Saying whack is whack, isn't it?
And then also, he said, damn, Jessica, looks like somebody gave you the Three Stooges eye poke in both eyes. Nyuk, nyuk, nyuk.
Don't play the clip, Rob.
I won't. Yeah.
But, I mean, to be fair, I think the only tears we saw happening in week one were from David on the Gen X tribe.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's careful where we point that finger, Jervis.
And then I've got a Darnell Hamilton at King Darnell 32 tweeted out, low key, I still have nightmares about getting voted out. Damn mental giant.
Oh,
it's kind of a sad tweet.
Yeah.
But Darnell should not be sad because he will be my guest next week in week two for the voicemails. Very excited to get into everything with King Darnell on the voicemails, and I had announced that PG Law is going to be the guest for the recap next week. Also, just to add a cherry on the top of that, PG Law is scheduled to join me in studio next week, so it should be a jam-packed week two here on RHAP.
I'll be happy to pass the crown onto the true king, King Darnell.
All right. And then I do have some tweets here from one more survivor that was recapping the premiere. Are you ready for some Rupert tweets, Kurt?
Oh, God, I don't think I've ever done this before.
All right, here we go.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yeah. All right. Rupert tweets are back here, season 33. And Kurt, this is a real special week of Rupert tweets because I have three actual real life Rupert tweets.
Whoa.
And then I have one, for the first time ever, I think, on the show, one Jamie Huffman tweet. Okay. Three Rupert tweets. One Gen X Jamie. I think, is she a Gen X? Is she Gen X or millennial?
Oh, God. Probably Gen X.
She's probably Gen X?
Yeah.
I feel like Eric Huffman. Eric. I think he's a millennial. I'm not sure. Let me see. Let's look real quick. Okay, so Jamie Huffman, is she millennial or Gen Xer? Is she Gen X Jamie? I hope so. According to Survivor Wiki, official official resource of Survivor information, according to Andrew Savage and others, 31. She's 31, so she's still millennial Jamie.
Okay.
Okay. Of course, Jamie Dugan, as she was well known when she played Survivor with next week's recap guest PG Law. Okay. All right. So we have three Rupert tweets and one tweet from Jamie Huffman. All right. Here we go. Number one, she's going home soon. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, maybe they will make a survivor with the first cast off. Ha ha. Number three, paranoia is setting in.
Okay.
And number four, to at Jeff Probst, I'm an old washed up survivor. Can I get a retweet? I'm not sure if somebody had just gotten a retweet from Jeff Probst right before then.
So I see that. So, okay, here's the thing. I'm torn between number two and number four.
Okay.
Number four, it's kind of going two ways on it. On the one hand, I could see Jamie being a little bit more self-deprecating before Rupert was, but I couldn't see Jamie necessarily reaching out to Jeff like Rupert would. Whereas number two, it ends in ha-ha. One of my biggest pet peeves of millennials. I don't necessarily think I remember Rupert ending his tweets with ha-ha before. I could be completely wrong on this. So...
And I believe that Taylor said that millennials say LOL.
Yeah. And it will.
Well, so what do you prefer? Do you prefer like a smiley face? What do you prefer? Or just like the tweet should just make you laugh or not?
Exactly. Don't tell me how to react. Yeah. But if you mean like that you're being kidding or something, you just put a smiley face at the end of it. But
you like the winky face because it's hard to get the. I'm saying something sarcastic. Sometimes I feel like that you need the ha ha. I don't try to do LOL anymore. Boy, this is tricky, Kurt.
I'm still gonna guess number two ending in a ha ha was Jamie's tweet.
Okay.
And number keep in mind, remember, I love losing. It's so fun. one of my favorite things.
Okay. So Kurt says, maybe they'll make a survivor with the first cast off. Ha ha. Right. And of course, the answer is
no pumpkin.
No, I'm sorry, Kurt. You should have gone with your gut. It was Jamie Huffman who said, I'm an old washed up survivor. Can I get a retweet? Don't forget, Rupert was the first one out in Blood versus Water. So he's sort of like asking for a season for him to come back. That should have been your tell. Trying to set up another reason for him to come back for the fifth time.
Good point.
Yeah. Some other highlights from the Rupert tweets. He also tweeted out, this is an exciting survivor because Laura has been able to stay awake past 9 p.m. Whoa. That's pretty good.
Yeah, go Laura.
Yeah. There was also an exchange that I happened to see on Wednesday night, and I think I retweeted it, where Rupert tweeted something. Somebody...
Can I get a retweet, Rob?
Yeah, no, Rupert tweeted something, and then somebody tweeted to Rupert, like, hey, this is a Rupert tweet. And then he responded, he's like, yeah, I just tweeted it.
No, that's not what I mean. But I tweeted it.
Yeah, of course it's a Rupert tweet. Yes, it is. Wait, who's on first? Yeah. All right. So, very fun stuff, Kurt. Great job.
You need to start throwing some like Rupert Everett tweets in there, just like so the true Rupert tweets. Like, which was the Survivor Rupert?
Maybe for down the road. We could do that. All fun stuff, Kurt. Great job on the week one voicemails.
Well, thank you. It was a good time.
Yes, I had lots of fun. Forgot how fun it is to get through all these voicemails. And of course, you guys can keep your voicemails part of the show every week. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail. We start taking the call. I mean, you can call in really all week long. We'll check them. And typically, I mean, this was a show that we recorded on Friday, but normally it goes up until around like 6 p.m. Eastern, the day after the episode, to get your voicemails in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. All right, Kurt, what's the hashtag for this episode?
Well, we've got a few in contention.
Yes, we have a few.
All right, we've got... Milk drone and drone nipples. we've talked about going full Kiefer. And then, of course, there's also See a Downside.
Yeah, See a Downside. We shouldn't do anything about Designated Survivor. It's just going to get too caught up in all of the overall Designated Survivor, which actually did very well, I think, on Wednesday night for the premiere.
Yeah, I watched it Thursday, but it
was, yeah. There may be, maybe Josh Wiggler and I over the weekend, we could have a little bit of Designated Survivor know-it-alls. I'm just saying. It's possible. I'm floating it out there.
Good.
Okay. All right. So, Kurt, which one? It's your voicemails. What do you like?
I like the milk drone. It's simple. Okay. It's to the point. As tempted as I am to do See a Downside, milk drone is good.
It didn't come in a drone.
Yeah. Boy, I can't wait till milk comes in a drone. I mean, how long do you think it takes to get to your house with the drone?
I don't know. It depends on how heavy the cow is.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Of course, you could follow the great Kurt Clark on Twitter, at Kurt Clark. Kurt, you got any podcasts coming up these days?
Yeah, actually, it's the premiere of Once Upon a Time this Sunday. So I will be back with Mike Bloom to cover that. Mike Blumizzle. We usually record either Sunday or Monday nights. So expect our premiere coverage to come out in the overpass after the weekend.
Okay. All right. Very exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, I mentioned it in jest at the top of the show, but if you ever want to hear any of our old podcasts, so much easier to find on the all new robhasawebsite.com. All right. So, Kurt, thanks again for coming on board. If you guys are at a podcast this weekend, I did something that we never tried to do before. I made this week's edition of the Patron 5 for 5 available for all to hear. Just go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. You can also see a brand new behind-the-scenes video that I posted this week of what it actually goes on over here and why I make all these podcasts. That's all up on our Patreon page, which is a way that people are able to help support Rob Has a Podcast. If you want to find out more of the benefits of becoming a patron, you can go check out that page and hear this week's 5 for 5, which is the podcast I do with the First Lady of Podcasting, Nicole Cisternino, on our page, robhasawebsite.com/patron. And then coming up in the beginning of next week, we are going to have our Wiggle Room. Josh Wiggler is going to be back. He will also be in studio this weekend with me to record a Wiggle Room in the flesh. Very exciting. And then we will get into Why Rachel Lost with David Bloomberg. That's going to be coming up on Tuesday. Plus, we should have some preseason coverage of Big Brother OTT and much more. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.